Welcome to the Simply Be Found Huddle. You get Dean and Rob talking about everything business and helping your business be able to grow. Today we have our guest Matt on. Matt, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Other than being a dreary day in Colorado, more sun.
I was going to say, it's pretty rare for us to get another person from Colorado on so far into the huddle. So welcome. And it's nice to be just down the street from basically each other. Well, down I-25, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, so can you tell everybody a little bit about you and your background?
Sure. Yeah, I run Endeavor with my partner. She and I started it about 10 years ago. We're both heavily kind of technical developer kind of focused. We've worked in the media and in publishing kind of space around website development for myself, a little over 27 years, right at that. So bring in quite a depth of experience around those large scale publishing sites. But again, we're really on the development and technical kind of implementation side of websites. We have, team within the US, but we've always been distributed. I moved out to Colorado about 10 years ago with my family from New Jersey. So used to work in New York and now kind of get to work everywhere from anywhere.
That's kind of neat. So your background is more technical than when the SEO side of it then?
So we're not like a specialist in SEO. We implement the rules and recommendations of some SEO vendors for sure. So we know the rules and things like that. We could debate the rights and wrongs, but I don't think anyone knows at the moment.
There is no magic wand that you can wave and all of a sudden, poof, it just works instantly.
Definitely.
And there's a lot of trial and errors, and more now than probably ever. What works for one person, even if they're in the same industry, might not work for the next person in the same industry, even if they're from the same town.
Right.
It's an amazing world that we're in right now, and everybody's a little bit different and unique. When I look at data, that's what I'm seeing, which I don't think I've ever seen in my 30 years, unique every business is at this point.
Yeah, we work on more sites that are definitely more, well, global or US-based, like across the board in news and entertainment. So we've seen a shift. Well, we've seen a shift of people thinking about like how to create content for SEO and just create a bunch of content. And now like it's starting to go into like, how do I get into ChatGPT? Like, how do I get in those results? Because people are seeing referrals from those places. Actually in their analytics. So that's what I was like on the SEO side, like everything is potentially changing completely. Cause it's not about a search engine. It's now they're having a communication with a engine.
Well, it is. It's like having an assistant that's able to answer any questions. I was playing around with the new Google that came out. I found four or five different versions of their AI between what browser I was in, what account I was logged into. And I'm like, I confused myself for a little bit. I'm like, what the hell? Why is this on this one, not on this one? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And I think it's them doing some A/B testing to figure out what they're going to deliver out for that AI for that piece. But I think it's a whole new world. I mean, I've always said the digital world is like, the Wild West. And yeah, it's turned more into the Wild West all over again. I thought we were kind of getting out of that, and I was a little afraid that I was going to be bored, but we're right back into it. Now, Matt, one thing I didn't do is I didn't check. You're not a current agent with or agency with us, are you?
No, we're not.
Okay. I'm waiting for somebody to call me out and go, "Why I use you all the time?" Like, oh, well, we're starting to get to that point that we're big enough that we almost know everybody, but yet –
yeah,
we kind of have to think about that sometimes.
Yeah.
So Matt, do you spend more time with local businesses or more of the national global concept? That's a little different process than than the local piece.
Yeah, as far as the company, we're dealing with more national, definitely national brands, national kind of media type things between either brands or media companies. Some global, but usually the sites that we build are actually US based. So not really the local. Like when I tell people what I do, because like if I do the dumbed down version, I build websites. They're like, "Oh, cool. Can you help me with my website?" I'm like, I can try.
There's a different science between those two.
Yeah, for sure. Like it is, I don't know how I mean, I talk to like the friends that are in the business also, like, or I go to conferences or people are working on the local ones. Like, I don't know how you make money on these. Like not that they're not profitable, but like the amount of time it takes me to shift to that type of mindset versus what I can do on a global, like on a larger scale site, people think it's more complicated, it's just different. Like it's not more of either way. I just feel like it's different, which is weird because they're websites.
But they're so different in their own way. I mean, you don't have to worry about some of the nitty gritty stuff like you do. Sometimes the local site can almost be harder.
Oh yeah.
Than doing a national site because there's a lot more little tiny pieces. There's a lot more toggle switches. So the only way, so I've owned and operated agencies since 2008 and I've done everything from doing big publications to enterprise to doing local businesses to having huge e-commerce sites. I've pretty much messed around in every realm possible. And what I've done, the only way you can make money inside the web design agency is either you're wearing all hats and you're being everything and it's just a job for you. Right. But if you're a true agency, you have to have workflows, you have to have already pre-built templates, and you have to have plug and play stuff to be able to put it in. That's why we made the bit, or why I made the pivot of coming up with a tool rather than being just a website provider, because it's turned in more of a commodity more than anything. And Dean started as a client of mine for our story. And I started seeing voice search and he goes, well, I walked into his office once and asked him how things were going. This would have been 2000. And then asked him, what I ask you, how are you being found on voice search? Yeah, he goes, what's that? He tried searching his business, wasn't found. I'm like, I think it's going to be a new thing that's starting to come out. And I must start looking at it. And we started looking at it together and Simply Be Found was born. Simply Be Found was actually originally going to be a website development company that I was going to pop up. I was going to build and I was going to sell off as one of my pieces. But the domain fit for what we do inside of there. But the only, I mean, so I saw the writing on the wall that we're about ready to enter into a spot where it's a commodity versus being just there. And you can't make money unless you have your systems properly set up for it. So right. I agree with you on that.
So yeah, I think that's one of the issues where I have personally, like I don't have a system for local at all, like, or even really in-depth knowledge, right? Like there are, like you said, there's minute differences that make a big difference. Versus I do things at scale that, yes, there's performance and things like that, but those are like, in my world, they're simple, but complex for some people, right? Versus the same way for the opposite.
So you consider like regional, like let's say everybody wanted to do like the Western United States, you consider that more like a handling in the same fashion as a national brand kind of thing? Would you consider it that way? Or where does it change from being this big scope globally to more local?
Yeah. So like the local sites we work with, like it's actually in Denver, 303 Magazine is one of our local. So they're really like, they're dealing
with. I've tried getting into that magazine before.
Yeah, the website's about the only thing. So they do events and stuff like that. So that's why they're local. Like the brands, we don't really work with a local branding company or SaaS company. Like they're usually global or US based at least. And then the media companies that otherwise are typically US content, but they get a broader audience as well. So it's different where they're like, they don't only want to look at local, but they happen to typically, like that's their bigger audience.
I think there's different categories for websites, Dean, to where you have your enterprise sites. These are the ones that you have to go in, buy steak dinners for, kiss ass to be able to get and know somebody inside of their yacht and all kinds of stuff. Those are the big old sites out there that would be like Pepsi and big, huge brands that are worldwide. And then you have your e-commerce sites, and either you're going to have a split on there to where you have multiple different types of agencies that end up working with them. You might get someone that doesn't really know what they're doing and barely they know how to design the basics of it. And they start it up. And a lot of times it's kind of like they're the ones running it, but sometimes those are the agencies they go hire for it. And they're going to get that kind of work out of it. Or there's going to be someone who knows that kind of, they specialize in that e-commerce site. Or you might get someone who specializes in local but doesn't specialize over there. And it ends up being these almost like different industries within one industry. I don't know if that came out in English, but
yeah, no, it did. But so I understand the local piece because that's where my expertise with Assembly Be Found is more local and regional kind of thing. How do you drive traffic in a bigger site? I mean, you have to have brand awareness. Do you have to do more ads? Do you have to do media releases? Give me an idea of what's in that process, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat advertising, like, but a lot more like social. Like, they have to have social influencers driving traffic initially, but there's so much more on the brand, kind of just awareness. And these sites have been around for, some of them have been around for a long time, and they'll acquire a smaller brand and then kind of inject traffic into that by, you know, all the people going to the big one. They send it to the little one for a while, and that'll boost it up. There's definitely things like that. I mean, we're less on the, like, how do you pump traffic into it, and more about how do you do things that maintain and like build the infrastructure so that it grows, I guess, organically would be kind of the right wording, but really just how do you do it so that it maintains itself for its own growth. Yeah, we're not like we don't come in with solutions around the audience kind of growth or things like that. It's really around like, how do you not lose audience? And we have like, you know, performance is a big thing, right? If the site sucks, then they're going to leave. But if you're also pumping a bunch of ads on the site, or if it just doesn't look good, like, those are reasons for people to just leave. And we'll come in and help audit or correct long-term clients that are kind of deviating a little bit.
I gotcha. So after you get them built, then it's a lot of maintenance that goes involved with it.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of the sites are just purely maintenance, but like a lot of them are, especially when you're looking at media publishing, like news and entertainment type websites. You'd be surprised as like just an audience person, like looking at it, it seems like it never changes, but there's so much involved on the editorial workflow. That site is constantly changing. So things that people don't even see. So it's always feature development on those sites, even though it's kind of maintenance, like keeping it up and running, but there's always something that someone wants that someone else has, basically.
A lot of it can be, and you have to be really careful that on those sites, from what I've experienced in my past, it's been over 5 years for me to work on a site like that, Matt, but there's a lot of pieces that you have to still watch out for, that feature creep, and you have to make sure you have the right features, and you're spending a lot of time on user experience for UI UX, because you have to be able to maintain them on that site to be able to keep getting your ad revenue, because you're really not worried about the ads coming to you. You're worried about the ads you're running and making money from on those sites, or a membership, depending on what model or what combination model it has gone to.
Yeah, it's a constant kind of, and it's not really a battle, but they have, like, there's, even within these organizations, they'll have editorial, they'll have ad sales, which are selling ads on their own site, right? And then you have development teams or product teams that, like, want their features to do their thing. Like, ad sales, they'll want more ads. The more ads they can put on a single page, the more revenue, technically. But the product team is like, well, I want it to have a really good experience. So I want no ads. And then there's a negotiation.
Yeah, that's an internal negotiation, if you will, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the smarter players will do some testing, and, you know, let's see what adding one more ad onto the page does. How about we put it over here instead, type of thing? And, like, you know, it's not always like we can lose some audience if we're going to generate more than enough revenue to offset that, because then there's other ways of bringing in the audience potentially.
Are you using heat mapping and all that for your analytics side on most of those sites?
Yeah. Most of those sites will do some type of heat mapping. Not like all the time, but when things are running, like if a new test is running, usually, like, just the majority of the traffic is almost always the same. Most of the traffic is going to come from their newsletters. Like, they have a big newsletter list typically, and the traffic will spike during that time. So it's usually really, core audience will be to it. So they're clicking on an article and they're scrolling on an article. It's the external ones that'll come in, and then you see the navigation, like the clicks around that. But that's where, like, having another ad at the top of the page, well, what does that do? Like, because heat mapping doesn't really affect, like, the time on page, but right. If they scrolled, We need to have some kind of analytics around, like if they've scrolled 10%, 20%, or 100% when we added that new. It's usually, and it's like, it's not usually like a static ad. It's some kind of video thing that like takes over the whole screen for a little while.
So I'm going to freak everybody out on what heat mapping really is. Yeah. So it's basically, everybody knows where your mouse is and how long you hover in a spot. And if you come back to it, basically. So when you're searching a site, you guys know, basically you gather information and collect that data for determining what to do to make it more of a better user experience, basically. My age group goes, what? You know where our mouse is?
I remember when I first watched kind of the replays of what that was how that was happening, like seeing, and then later you'd see names on these, like, what? You know the person when they came back, you know, what they clicked on this time, what they were kind of hovering over. Like there's people that used to read with their mouse, right? And kind of go like this, and you could see that. Like it was just a scanning of lines going across the page for certain age demographics.
Shit, I'm trying to remember what program that was. I know exactly which one you're talking about for that one. But I mean, there's different there's different colors on the screen too, Dean. So you know how many mice hit that area or where the finger went on mobile. You can see every single step. I mean, the amount of data that you collect on those types of sites is just amazing to me. And that would be, that's the real big difference between a local site and one of those regional sites like that or a news site, because you're looking at different points of what your success is going to be. On a local site, all you care about is how many people are filling out a form, how many people are calling me, and how many people are buying. Nobody really cares if they read the whole article. We look at articles on most of those local sites as they're a way to get indexed in SEO.
Right.
Someone's going to click on it. They're going to look at it for 10 seconds or 6 seconds or whatever it might be. And they're going to go to the homepage, fill out form, boom, take action. That's all you're looking for. It's a wham, bam, thank you, kind of ma'am moment. And there's, they want them to stay there and read and do all those things.
That'd be me.
You do like to read blogs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you actually read a blog? Who reads blogs?
Well, I thought that's information you're supposed to get. Now, do you guys use blog information? Do you guys work on content, you know, as far as keywords and things like that as well?
No, so we don't create content at all. It's interesting. We're actually working on, because we work with sites that build content all the time, we're working on some tools that pull in AI, not to create content, but to grade a site's content. And we were thinking about this for big publishers initially, but so it basically takes their personas that either they've defined or the system defined, and then it'll start grading their content to tell them how this is going to apply to their personas. We're like, well, this could actually work really well for small or even local B2B type sites where, like, if they can define those personas, like how can I grade it? Or potentially, like, the first iteration was like, well, we can actually have it create content. It's like, this is, and it's really done really well, but it's specifically for their personas. It's like, I don't know if, I know content sites don't want to do that, but like a B2B or marketing site, like, why not? I mean, they're already doing it. Why not make it simpler inside their CMS so they can just click a button and say, what topics do I want to write about today?
Now, did I hear you say you're using AI to do that, to do the grading, to do the research, if you will, to say this is good or, and does comparative research basically?
Yeah. It's basic. And then, so we're tying it into their analytics and we're hoping to get, that's the part that we're trying to work on now. And this is all internal beta stuff, but we're trying to look at, like, how can we look at past articles that didn't have this applied, right? Or any grades, but we can grade it now, look at the analytics, how it applied to, and then did it match with their personas? And then predict for future content. How it might do. I think that's where the bridge of, like, where we used to be doing it for SEO, if the LLM, ChatGPT thinks it's doing well, since that's the new audience, that might, like, people are going to be using ChatGPT for a lot of content searches, I think. I mean, my kids do it. That's all they use.
I'm seeing analytics like crazy.
That's what I was curious. Like, I've seen it a little bit you know, I talked about that. Like, I've seen it more and more. It's like, as a user, I don't click on the sources. Like, I'm just reading it for the information. Like, I'm using it, getting the information. Like, okay, I'm good with that. Like, obviously, the people are like clicking through because it is showing up as referrals on quite a few sites now.
I've been seeing a lot of students going out there and using. I'm sorry, Robbie interrupted you. But they're taking the AI, they're creating content, and they're taking the AI and then doing evaluations, saying, "Is this in line with? Is my research right?" That kind of thing. I know that in branding and persona, that's a little different world. But I've seen a lot of people use AI not to generate content, but to compare and contrast their content. So that's just an interjection of an observation I'm seeing. So Rob, I'm sorry I interrupted you there. So
on a local level, we see it having a conversation with the person having a conversation with the AI. Have you ever searched for a local business inside of AI before or seen it done?
I've seen it done. I've definitely searched for things that are local and then found businesses.
No, go for it. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
So I'm seeing it to where people are searching for products that someone carries, for services that they offer, for menu items that a restaurant might have. So if they're not talking about all of those points from that kind of level, the AI will never know it even exists inside of their current marketing. They don't even know to make the recommendation because there's no data on it. So I'm seeing it from a data aspect where it's really looking at that information. And then people are clicking on, you know, inside of that, or they're telling the voice, if they're talking to say Grok or ChatGPT, and it came up inside of there, they're asking it to go to the website, and it'll actually open Safari or whatever web browser and go to the site. And that's where you get the affiliate piece of saying, or not the affiliate, but the referral piece of saying it came from ChatGPT or it came from Grok. And most of them aren't even coming up, but I mean, they do like 60% of the time from what we're seeing.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine. He does marketing for now down a single site, but we were talking about it a little bit and he's like, we're looking at like basically creating our knowledge base more public in ways that are actually ingestible by ChatGPT and the other ones. So that because of that communication, like they need all that information getting to those versus having on FAQ pages, like they need it actually in a way that actually makes sense that definitely makes sense. Like you said, like I get it, like how, and then you have brand awareness. And I think that's where it's hard to measure. Like my use case, I'm reading it. I now have brand awareness of whatever I just looked up, but I didn't click anything. Like,
right.
But yeah. I might buy.
You have a lot of that too. And that's for local businesses, that's reduced how much search traffic they're getting. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people out there going, "Whoa, I don't know why my search traffic died today." Well, that's because of XYZ. They're getting their information in a different way. And if you didn't come up on there, you're done.
Yeah.
We utilize a lot of pieces on that in the local side. We have our listings engine, which once AI came out and started doing it, and we re-looked at our network list, I mean, we're over 1,000 networks that works with, and possibly some of the publications that you do sites for, but we provide that data over as that aggregator piece, and it goes out to the, you know, all of the networks, but we also rely on their website having the right schema around their FAQs on their page for local business. And I'd say I think we came up with the data team the other day, 75% of websites don't have local business schema on for local businesses. Which are you guys using schema at all for yours?
So we don't, mainly because we're like, well, we had it, but it shows up as Denver, and like, we don't even have a real office in Denver anymore. I'm in Broomfield. It's the north of Denver, right? I don't drive into a city anymore.
He goes, "Oh, their office is over here." I'm like, "That's a co-working space. I know exactly which one that is."
Exactly. So they used to have like our office hours and like all the stuff and locations. Like, well, that's cool. But for us, like I don't need to work with someone down the block or find me in Denver necessarily. My wife, like I was thinking about this. So when I looked at like your guys' site and everything you guys do, it's like, well, my wife runs a photography business. Like she's a professional photographer. Like she is. And I've had to run her site. Like I need to offload some of that work to someone that actually knows how to do local, because I don't. Maybe she'd have a better kind of response locally.
We actually have plans, Matt. So tell your wife that we have a plan. Yeah,
I saw that.
We'll do an evaluation of her site and make recommendations. Yep. We won't do the actual content for her, but then it tells people that this is what's missing and that's what you should be doing.
We have to add on to doing content, Dean.
We do
all the content too. I mean, there's a certain way to write for content for local as well versus not, because I don't think a lot of copywriters can write well for local.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for people who do blogs and all this SEO stuff, they struggle at writing sales copy. That's a whole different piece than writing regular copy. That's a whole other piece. So be thankful you don't have to deal with that side. You actually have writers that write your articles.
Go ahead, Rob.
What are the biggest challenges you've faced with AI coming out? Speaking of AI and talking about it for a little bit, what are the challenges you've seen come out for your industry?
We're developers, right? Hands-on website developers. I think it's a challenge. It's also an unknown still. Like we use it as a tool. It definitely has accelerated some of the work that we do. It's also accelerated the work that our clients would do or our competitors would do. So it's a big unknown. I think the challenge is the unknown side of it, of what people are going to use for specifically for like our work, our type of work. We haven't really hired junior developers in a long time. We hire kind of a higher level 10 plus years of experience type thing. So it doesn't really affect the people that we have, but like my son is going to college. His whole senior class this year, like he said whole, but I think it's a lot. Their offers got rescinded. And they're in mechanical engineering, but software, computer science, stuff like that. It's like, I couldn't believe it when parents were saying that they're trying to find work for their kids late last year. Like, and then through, it's like, it's computer science. Like, what? Like, so that's, it's an upheaval of like unknown for business to hire junior people. I'm concerned that we don't figure out how to get those people into jobs, because then eventually you'd never get the senior people. Right. And it's going to be the same in all industries, content writing and everything else. But like, that's the biggest thing. And it's, again, not affecting me directly at this point, like as very senior gray haired developer.
Come on. Now.
It definitely affects our industry. Yeah. Not quite there yet.
Okay.
Well, I see that being a big problem, because I mean, you have AI replacing that junior person, that side-by-side person that would get that action. I mean, we've seen that for years inside the tech world. It's gotten worse and worse. And I think AI has made it even worse for filling that gap for a lot of those. But I mean, we're going to lose a whole entire mindset and ability coming up as people start to retire out of this industry. I mean, think about how many skills you pull out for development. And at least I know I do, and I'm going to date myself from writing back in MS-DOS days. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still use some of that knowledge from then to come all the way up to here. And these young kids, they've never done it.
Yeah. And I think it's not just like that side of things. It's the whole experience of like problem solving, and not that they can't, because they will, that they develop that. But if they can't do the work because that work doesn't exist, then I don't know how you develop problem solving.
I saw the same thing kind of happen. And I was a machinist at one point in my life, ended up being an engineer. And I saw that happen in the machine world when the machining centers, all that, the NC, CNC stuff came out. They quit hiring and doing apprenticeship programs where they taught them how to use things. And now we're starting to have brain drain because we didn't bring any youth up to teach them some of the skills. And I think, you know, right now we're okay with that because there's a lot of people. But when you get to be my age, I'm 67 this year, and I'm starting to see that my group starting to drop off and we don't have anybody coming in behind. So we've got to be really careful on how we handle that in this world right now. Because it's all based, economic based, I get that, but there's still some mental things that have to go on. But I think your people that are kind of marginally skilled, they're the ones that are going to drop off the worst.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
There's a whole experience piece. I mean, that's happening across a lot of industries. I was talking to, when I was on vacation, there was a guy that was staying in the place below us, and he specializes in training police officers and going to academies. And he goes, do you have any kids that have never been punched?
Yeah.
Because I never thought it'd be a problem of, you know, people, I've never been punched. Well, you can't really get in a fight, never been punched before. You don't want to be on a police force, so that'd be your first fight.
Yeah, I thought of it that way, but you're right. If you've never experienced some of these things, you don't know how to deal with some of these. Yeah, it's a, but I think that's true in any industry,
right?
Per se, you know, especially in the mental game industry, especially. So, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I forgot my question. So that's what happens when you get older. So go ahead, Rob. I'll come over there in a second.
Are you working on anything new and exciting that you want to share?
I mean, I kind of mentioned the plugin and kind of tool that we're using for creating content and grading content. That's kind of the most interesting thing that we're working on kind of as a company. I don't know if it's going to be a product or just kind of additional knowledge that we can share with our clients. And again, it's kind of beta type work. I mean, it's outside of that. Like I do joke with some of my friends, like it's web development. Like, yes, we talk about how fancy and everything is, and people, you know, a year plus, all the junior developers would tell us how we were supposed to be doing things now. And it's like, well, it's the same thing. Like, it's just new words. And it has been the same thing, like for the whole kind of time around web development. We work with CMSs that create those fields that have content, and those content, the content creates a website, and then people read it. That's actually not the case anymore. I mean, so I don't know, like maybe if we had this conversation in 6 months, like, oh, we're doing all these cool things, but we're just trying all these cool things. And I don't know what's going to stick to really talk about, like the amount of like different tools that we're having to purchase and like try for a month or two. It's like, I can imagine why there's such a big influx of money into these AI companies, because you have to try all the tools and they're all $30 a month. So you try
and cancel the damn thing, and then you get charged again.
Yeah. Yes.
Or you forget about it. You stop, you know, you look at it, you go, oh, I have that tool. I did that the other day. I was like, I need a tool for this. And I was like, oh, I think I'll buy it. I went, because you already have an account logged in. It worked. And I was like, oh, crap. Yep. We're paying for this every month.
Yep. My business partner and I were doing cash flow this morning. I mean, you know, we're a small business. We have to do our own cash flow. We look through everything and like, well, let's look through these. And we closed out the month too. So we started looking at some of the accounts. Like, I was looking at them like, wait, I thought I reduced that one. So we're like, all right, we'll just go on the call. So we went to the site, like went through the like change plan. I was like, cool, I did it. I was like, wait a second, nothing happened. Like I scroll down the bottom. Like, oh, there's another button. I forgot to click the button. Like, okay, the page reloaded. Wait, there's another step. I got to click that again. I had to click four more steps to actually reduce the plan. I was like, well, no wonder. I probably did this four times and forgot. And now 5 months later, we finally got reduced. It's like half the price for something we haven't used the whole time.
Yeah, Rob and I talk about that all the time. The little stuff will kill you as a small business. I mean, if you're not paying attention.
I mean, we have to go through and budget now. If we have a lot of software we're paying for AI. I added it up one day. I never want to add it up again for how much we pay for that, for all the seats and everything. It's like, wow. But you're right.
For one of our UI UX software accounts, we had 5 seats. Well, only 3 people are using it. So why do we pay for the extra 2 seats or whatever, you know, whatever it is? I mean, you just have to be paying attention. So anyway, I remember my question finally. We were talking about skill level. You said you hire people that are like 10 years plus. Mm-hmm. And so you're not really doing the junior development or junior developers. Are you using plugins? And then how much custom software, custom code are you putting into your website? I just kind of, you know, because that, you know, for people that go out and do the freebie websites, there's obviously is plug and play, if you will. But for a site like yours, I'm assuming there's a lot of custom information that has to go into it.
Yeah, for the work we do, it's almost all custom development. So we use some off-the-shelf plugins for, you know, we're in WordPress. So we do WordPress exclusively, basically. I should have mentioned that. So for the customer sites we do, it's almost all custom solutions. Theme can kind of go either way. So they have to know what they're doing. For our personal site, I don't know that there's any custom code on our personal site. It's a marketing site. And that's where the people have talked to me about the threat of Wix, Squarespace, and all the ways of building websites for small scale sites. If we didn't build WordPress on WordPress, I don't know that we would have our personal, our company marketing site on WordPress or not. It's a hard sell there. My wife's photography blog and site, that's on WordPress, but it's a lot to maintain a site like that small, in my opinion, that small, right? That can be done on all these other platforms for a pretty small fee. And they can do a lot. They have a lot of tools. I mean, you guys would know probably better than I would if you can do all the things that I think you can do. I think you can do anything you want on WordPress, and that sometimes is a problem.
It gets in the way.
Yeah. So we have hired more junior people in the past, and that it wasn't a good or bad thing. It was we were trying to hire some talent that we could grow into it, and they worked out fine. But what I found would be that they would just use all the things and then bloat up the site because all the plugins, you can keep adding plugins to do all the features, and then you're kind of done. And then you have to if there's an update, that's when things break, or security issues. That's where the security issues come in on WordPress. And not that the 10-year plus people or myself do it perfectly. I definitely break my fair share of things. But I would think that I have a little bit of thought process in there that chose to do the things that I do.
Yeah, Rob tries to keep me out of the back end because I'll screw it up. I'll turn something off that shouldn't have been turned off, and so mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that, Rob.
I thought Dean was going to share every time I log into a site and I happen to go into the plugin folder. I'm like, who the hell put this on? Why'd they do that? It's already covered by this one. What the heck? And then I love when I look at it to see who added it so I can go coach them. And I go, well, shit, that was me.
It's easy to do.
I love WordPress. I remember developing without WordPress. Mm-hmm. For how many plugins I've invested in, have lifetime licenses, and have a relationship with the developers behind them, it'd be hard to ever leave WordPress at this point.
Yeah, I have tried on these other platforms myself, and there's still problems there. But I can't finish it on those other platforms. On WordPress, there's nothing that can't be built on WordPress. It might take extra time potentially, but there's either a plugin for it or a very easy custom solution that will then be replaced by a plugin at some point, CRM integration or whatever. If the CRM is big enough, and there are even the small ones have plugins at this point. It's everything can be built on WordPress.
I think the other thing too is if you're with a developer and they happen to retire or to change their career, I think you hand off a WordPress site easier to other website designers than you can a lot of other platforms. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah,
I agree with it unless they put a bunch of custom code on it. And then sometimes finding that custom code or figuring out what they were thinking when they made a plugin, it could be a big issue. Yeah. But for the most part, for 90% of sites probably out there, it's a lot easier to hand it off to another or find somebody to replace them.
Yeah. The UI is the UI typically. And that's where if I go into a WordPress site and it looks different, I'm like, what happened? Why? The editorial admin or that side of things is different. It's like, no, this shouldn't be like this. A lot of times we get new clients because things are broken, obviously, right? We're not getting brand new. We don't do redesigns. We try to, and we'll partner with someone, but that's not the bulk of our work. The bulk of our work is someone did something wrong for some amount of time, and now they need us to come in and help. And it's like, well, if I can see it in the editorial interface that it's different, I don't even need to look at the code. I'm already going to know. They try to make it look like this other thing, basically.
I think most of the time when they want to hand off a website and there's something broken on it, they want you to fix it. So it's almost easier to start over. At least I think that's how I feel about it when we do some things.
It depends. Yeah, because you got to bring all the content over still. There's a lot of I've seen it to where, and this is why I talk about the hit by bus theory so much. A developer mm-hmm. goes away for whatever reason. You fire them, they die, they leave, whatever reason. I call that the hit by bus theory. So that hit by bus, if your web developer gets out, that's why you should have back-end access. If you own a website, they should not control your domain. And all of you should have control over all that, so you have the rights to move it. And WordPress makes it really easy to be able to do that if you run into that situation.
Yeah, I lecture plenty of even people that I'm just having conversations with. Like, you don't have access to your domain. Like, you need that. And you should probably control the hosting relationship. Like, we'll do it. Like, we'll be the admin on things. But even when you're with us, like, I don't ever want that control of like, oh, I'm going to turn off your site for some reason. That shouldn't be a thing unless you're not paying for many months.
For our server, we require them to be inside of there, but it's a lot different on the local side because it's not, for one, it's not as much to move if you ever wanted to leave. We never hold anybody hostage on their site. I'll provide you all the files, whatever you need. I'll give your new developer access if someone ever decides to make that move. But for how much goes into the hosting and all the different stuff that we do, we have it pretty much systemized all the way down. Yeah, but if I was taking on a big publisher site, I wouldn't want to have access to that. It'd be a nightmare to ever move it. For one, everything would break. I mean, that's how hosting companies get you and get you to stay, because moving is a pain in the butt for any of that server transfer. Yep. Now, there's going to be some computer guy out there that goes, that's not true. And great, more power to you. I break shit when I do that.
And those guys that say that, we can't afford to have workforce anyway, probably. So.
Well, Matt, if anybody is looking for you, what does your ideal customer look like, and how can they find you and all those good details?
I mean, our most ideal client is going to be a digital media publisher doing some kind of content, news, entertainment, some kind of ad revenue kind of type site. That's the most ideal. We definitely work with SaaS, B2B type companies, B2C, e-commerce type companies as well. Typically, they're going to be on WordPress. That is our primary kind of development background, or migrating to WordPress, or thinking about migrating off, and then we can tell them why not to.
There you go. I like it.
Awesome. And where can they find you at, Matt?
Yeah, so Endeavor, spelled weird, NDEVR.io on our website, but definitely LinkedIn if you can't spell that. Find me, Matt Dorman. Pretty easy to find. There's a few of us, but I'm the one smiling probably.
Dorman with one O, not two.
That's the other thing. Yep. Yeah, we like to drop L's.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it.